Hello, Jordan. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. A lovely space I'm in.
Well, it's a bit echoey right now. So if you're listening to anyone listening to this and you hear background noises or echo, we are getting the whole office revamped with a studio space and everything. And that means that we're out in the middle of the place. So yeah, apologies if there's echo. And Jordan, thanks. Hopefully you don't have an echoey voice.
Well, we'll find out.
We're going to find out. And you came down by car from Leeds today, right?
Today, yeah. We're based in North. We're based in Leeds City Centre, been there since 2016.
Cool. And today we're going to talk about your company, Hark.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to do this conversation because what you guys do is, it's a bit like DSR, but it's more than that, right?
Yeah.
I'll ask you about that in a second, but before you talk about the company, who are you? Right?
Yeah.
What were you doing before this?
So my name is Dawn Appleson. I'm the founder and CEO of Hark. We're an energy analytics and industrial IoT company. And before Hark, I was a software engineer. Been designing and building software since I was about 10, 12, all the way from games to PCB designs for like lights and control systems. And I kind of dropped out of school when I was about 17 and went to work in the industry as a software engineer, high performance data applications, that kind of stuff. Mainly making a lot of people money on things like ads and insurance and that kind of stuff. So a little bit soul destroying, but it got me into the industry. And then a few years into that kind of, I suppose, into that business, it sold. And the two gentlemen that they sold the business, I said I was leaving because I wanted to go and do what I'm doing today. You know, I have a passion for technology and physical connectivity of things. And they kind of said, look, we'll write you a check to kind of fund you first year's salary, and kind of away we go. But what I've been doing for the last kind of several years is basically in my bedroom writing code, trying not to electrocute myself, you know, with things like energy meters or inverters or whatever.
And so you're a software engineer by background, but now you're now running Hark,
yeah,
which is your company, and you've got a couple of other co-founders, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was working at kind of Branded 3, which was the digital agency that Vin and Patrick hired me at back when I was kind of 17. I met Jules and Andrew there, basically, and we ended up kind of working together there on all sorts of really, really cool stuff. But, and then, you know, when I said about when we had this idea for Hark, we'd always been talking about doing something together. They were like, yeah, let's do it. So,
your previous employer that sold wrote you a check 7 years ago.
Yep.
You started Hark, the three of you, in various bedrooms writing code.
And building hardware, yeah.
And building hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the company is a technology company that does what?
So we basically have a platform that allows companies, factories, retailers to connect to any industrial asset. So it could be an energy meter, energy storage system, commercial building, BMS. We've got wind farms on the platform, solar inverters. And what we're able to do is monitor those in real time. And if there's control capability, we can basically optimize those assets and send control signals in real time back down to them to do things. Typically, we're kind of improving efficiency of those assets, maximizing the output or reducing waste.
And so compared to I'm not trying to put you in a box, but I'm trying to get grounded somewhere, right? So how is this different from an aggregator?
Yeah, so fundamentally, like, we are a technology company, right? We do not interact ourselves with the market or anything like that. What we do is, with customers who are looking to control their assets, like for instance Sainsbury's, who are one of our biggest customers, they wanted to optimize their buildings, their lights, their refrigeration systems, their areas of their stores using their existing assets without having to replace them. So they took our technology, which works with all of those 20-year-old assets, you know, things like Modbus, BACnet, Ethernet, IP, MQTT, all built into the platform. And they have...
Well, that was a word salad there. So yeah, those are communications protocols for old stuff in supermarkets.
And
right?
New stuff, and not just supermarkets. It could be a factory. It could be a Tesla battery, for instance, you know, the power packs. These protocols are kind of ubiquitous and have been around since kind of the 80s. And fundamentally, there's not been a huge change in the way those protocols work over the years because these assets are typically designed to last a long time. So we have basically turned our platform into something that's plug and play with them. And then you can do stuff, whether it's from the cloud or what we call the edge, and the edge being like close to the asset from a compute perspective. So if you walk into any Sainsbury's store today, you know, when the energy prices change from for instance, a triad warning, you know, the price event, whatever they want to call it, within 60 seconds of a warning, our system will orchestrate a power profile change. So it's not necessarily DSR in terms of the market, it's for them to kind of reduce their energy spend.
So it's like DSR, so it is kind of DSR, but they're in control.
Yes, right. Exactly. And they can then plug in other systems to this, right? So if you imagine, like, you have platforms that will do this for you, right? But if you're the end customer with these assets on the site, you kind of have it, it's kind of a black box, right? And if you want to do things as well, if you want to control your assets, change set points, or do things that are kind of slightly outside of that energy space but related, then you can use our platform to do that, right?
And so let's get an idea of scale. And I'm going to come back to the technical stuff in a minute. So Hawk, how big is the company?
We're about 20, 25 people. We've kind of organically grown, right? So we're not really backed by any like VC, like big VC money in that sense.
So you customer funded from day one?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. And that's awesome. Been a really interesting journey.
It's kind of unusual now, right? So for some people call it bootstrap businesses or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of unusual for companies to go that way.
Yeah.
You must have been tempted to take growth capital, right?
100%. I think in the early days, you know, you see everyone getting funded, right? You know, and you know, you see news about, oh, you know, this IoT startup or this energy analytics company getting funded. And you're like, wow, those check sizes look massive. And then you think they're going to overtake you. But actually, you know, the complexity of what this is and what we do, it was really tempting. But actually, what we found out now is we've managed to build a significant platform in terms of IP, but also we've grown revenue and we've proven to external parties that not only can we run the business, grow it, maintain customers on multi-year deals, we've also been able to kind of, I suppose, look at the market and go, we can actually maybe take our pick when we want to do growth funding. We're not like in that kind of runway mode of chasing the raise, I suppose, that you kind of hear sometimes, especially in the current market and economic.
Well, I was going to say, right, because you guys are doing something very close to aggregators, but not, so with my old Kiwi Power hat on. Right? Yeah. There was Kiwi, there was Open Energy, there was Lime Jump, there was all these other companies, right? And terrific companies that had to do the market access thing and the technology thing.
Yeah.
And there was a huge variance in the capability on the technology side across those businesses, right? Some were fantastic, some not so. But what happened was there was growth funding left, right, and centre for these businesses, and there was an aggregator boom in the 2010s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just when you guys were around and you were doing your thing, and so you chose not to take part in that, right? You said, we're not going to do the market access thing.
Yeah.
We're just going to do the technology layer. And I'm sure you had a strategy behind it. You're still here and it seems to be going well.
Well, when that was going on, I was still in school, so Hark didn't exist.
Okay. Right?
So, you know, it's 2016 when we set the business up, and, you know, I look back on it now and I'm kind of glad we you know, because I've read a lot about it. You know, you see Lime Jump, you see Kiwi Power, you see, you know, Renko as well, right? And what they've managed to achieve and what they did back then, it made so much sense. But if we'd have got into that kind of area at that point in time, I don't think we would be where we are today, and you know, definitely would have the knowledge as well, right, that we have today around all these different assets. Because it's not just energy storage assets, it's not just solar. Like, we've got, you know, building management systems on the platform. You know, we've got that hooked into occupancy centers to do all sorts of control that are slightly outside of the energy piece, but also related, right? We did our first battery in 2018. It was like one of the Tesla power packs. It was like a, you know, 270 kVA, kind of 340 kilowatt hour battery, you know, and that was quite interesting because that was at the time when even still people struggled to connect and really orchestrate, you know, control of these assets for
even
what, you
now,
know,
right? Controlling batteries is still one of the hardest things to do. I mean, you mentioned Renko, right? Renko's got, I don't know how many people, 50, 60, 70 people.
Yeah.
And it takes that many people to get it right.
Yeah.
Which is insane, right? It's
because of the complexity and, you know, the amount of moving parts, right? If you think about what goes into controlling any asset or connecting to a building, you need to understand the protocols, understand the asset, you need the gateway device, you need the software, you need the connectivity piece, which is, you know, 4G, you know, how do you get network there? And they need all the back-end systems to monitor all of that, do the stuff, bean count. You need so much expertise all the way from electrical.
Plus, you need to be ahead of the game on the market side, which 100%. Is, that can be half your staff could be on the market side.
And that's why we don't do that.
Yeah.
We don't deal with the market. We are a pure technology company.
So so you mentioned Sainsbury's. That's a great customer. Congrats.
Yeah,
and we can all relate to that. Sometimes you walk into a Sainsbury's and you've got empty freezers that are still running. It's like, what's going on here? I think it's going to become a lot more important with especially power prices now in this winter. Everybody's going to be thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, even just the automated lighting control solution that's in place, that's running, that our software runs, I mean, it saves them 7 digits. Yeah, fully automatic. You know, no one touches it.
Just the supermarket lights?
Just a bit on the lighting, yeah.
And so what's the deal there? Like, surely the shops open, lights are on, shops closed, lights are off, no?
Yeah, well, the thing about... well,
a bit facetious, really.
Well, no, I mean, typically that's how it was. But if you think about it, right, there are different, I suppose, types of layout for a store, right? But also, there's, you know, some of those stores are 24 hours. The lights don't need to be on full for 24 hours. There's also look sensors and how bright it is outside and whether the cheese counter should be on at, you know, 3 p.m. on a Sunday because they don't sell as much cheese.
In it terms absolutely of like, should be on. Keep the cheese counter well, should be
you know,
open 24/7.
I mean, I love cheese, but, you know, whoever is planning that at the retailers, I mean, I don't deal with the planning. But the other side of it is, believe it or not, a lot of people had manual overrides in stores to like turn things on and leave them there. And there was no visibility, no way of automatic controlling and sending that, you know, signals back down. For us, what we demonstrated originally was existing system, zone level control, all the way from lux levels to percentage of how each individual zone of the store. And when someone hit a button to say override that to 100% and left it on for 2 months, 100%, our system within 3 seconds of detecting that would switch it back.
So if I walk into a Sainsbury's tomorrow,
yeah,
I'm probably more of a probably not a Sainsbury's man anymore, I must say. Not too expensive. I've got an Aldi at the end of the road. So
I make no comment about where I shop.
Yeah. if I did walk into Sainsbury's because Aldi was closed,
yeah,
I'd walk in and the site would be controlled by Hark Technology.
Yeah,
right?
So there's a gateway on site and it's not just connected to the lighting, it's connected to anywhere from 20 to 30 individual energy submeters. We stream minute by minute data of instantaneous power of all the assets. We also have minute by minute information around the lighting systems, all the zones, and there are other assets as well. If you go into their depots, all the refrigeration systems, ammonia panels, fire alarms, all that, our software, one gateway connected to all of this.
This is awesome. And what I like about this is it's the coming back to the aggregator thing, we all got hooked on like, have you got a 1 or 2 megawatt generator, or, you know, have you got, basically, are you big enough to get you into a bucket for store? Mm-hmm. With the old game, you know, can we get you and some others up to 10 meg? It became 1, but 10 meg. So we all got addicted to sort of like, if you're not half a megawatt or bigger, you're too small for us. It's too many, yeah. You know, we're only going after the low hanging fruit, if you like. And what's nice is that you guys have come along and said, well, we'll take the small stuff too.
And when I look at the platform and I can see instantaneous right now at 1 minute what each type of asset class across the whole of the UK is, it's tens of megawatts, right?
Yeah.
Now obviously you can't just shift all of that, but I'm hoping, as you know, with the way the energy transition is going, that we will be able to eventually like utilize these more in maybe the market somehow. To do that, it's in technologies there, regulation and how that actually is orchestrated. Because technically speaking, if you wanted to shed 10% of that within 60 seconds, it's doable, right?
What about so you guys save money, right?
Yeah.
For other companies. Are you also measuring the carbon saving? Are you doing anything on that?
Yeah, so it's like the biggest requested feature of our energy product. So we have three core areas we work in. The connectivity side, the analytics side in real-time modeling assets, and then our energy tools product, which is the bit that does all the half-hourly analysis, time-of-day profile analysis. It does integrations with billing providers as well, if you're rebilling stuff, which is quite interesting. And that is the most requested feature around carbon emissions. But a lot of people are looking at scope 3, right? And scope 3 isn't just what you do, it's about your whole supply chain.
So what's scope 3?
So scope 3 is basically anything in your supply chain that essentially is, you know, contributing to your emissions. So that could be your suppliers, how much they use, how much energy they use.
Where does the word scope 3 come from? Who decided this?
It's basically the standards around like carbon emissions. You know, I wish Angus, my data scientist, was here, who works on all this. But you know, there's things like ISO 50001 certifications and that. But those are defined by government bodies, and they're used in regulations to then track, and that's what we're seeing.
So companies, I'm not going to go back to Sainsbury's again. We need like a gong for every time we say Sainsbury's.
Well, we could say
companies,
like
factories,
Asda,
yeah.
Okay.
They're under pressure to do this scope 3 thing, and that is to consider all these additional carbon emissions.
And that's the thing about Hark is like, we're not like a sustainability, like emissions tracking company necessarily, but even getting scope 1 and 2 from an energy perspective, I mean, that's not just electricity, right? It's gas, water, everything else. That's difficult enough, right? And then you have to do that at scope 3. So, you know, we are seeing factories. You know, we work with a massive chemical plant. They're doing all of their factories, connecting all their distribution boards, gas, water, electricity, every minute that data comes to our platform. Their sustainability and net zero team are using that to figure out, how do we get rid of gas? How much is it costing us? How much in terms of emissions as well? And they will take that data and they can hit a button, because previously it would take months to figure out, how do you actually, you know, how do we get this data? I mean, the utilities, their data feeds are not great.
Right? Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. So if you guys are, to say you've got a big industrial plant that's making, I don't know, little lizard things like this.
Yeah,
that's a Komodo dragon, not a lizard.
It's similar.
I'm going to get crucified for this.
You should call it a Modo dragon.
It is. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the Modo dragon. I got it wrong. Anyway, so we've got a factory that makes these things.
Yeah.
And it uses tons of energy because it's really high end.
Yeah.
And so
believable for these.
And so, but that factory has signed a contract with, let's say, EDF or ENGIE or whatever to supply them power.
Yeah.
And EDF or ENGIE or whoever the supplier is has had to buy that power in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you guys come along against a curve, right?
They've
been promised a curve by the industrial process. Where we said, Monday to Friday, we're going to make these Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
And then Saturday and Sunday, we're going to stop.
Yeah.
And overnight, we're not going to do anything. And then you guys, so they've got this shape of power that they've bought. And then you guys come along and do a deal with the Komodo dragon factory.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, we can save you money here, we can save you money here. And suddenly the shape that EDF has been promised on this like 5-year deal, you guys are messing around with it. And they're exposed to all this imbalance cost.
Yeah. It's...
So explain that, Jordan.
I'm sorry. Look, this is why we don't interact with the markets, right? I know I'm losing, like as an actual kind of domestic customer, right? I see my bills going up. But I think fundamentally, like we know in the industry that something has to change, right? It isn't sustainable. Fundamentally, yes, the market dynamics, they work the way they do. And it was something, you know, I remember in 2018 when we were doing the triad avoidance stuff, and I was thinking to myself, who's going to end up paying for this? And now we know who
was,
right?
Yeah.
But it's not, right, I mean, just to be clear, disclaimer, we are not the reason that people's bills are going up, right? Just to be clear, right? If anyone's listening to this and thinking, you know, Ofgem are going to increase.
They'll be protesting outside Hark HQ in Leeds.
We're all remote anyway.
It's all good. Super glued to the front of your thing.
But we know that there has to be a shift, right? Like, it's not, we're not the only ones doing it. And for good reason, right? Like, these businesses are being charged a huge amount of money for electricity, gas, and they do not have the cap, right? And it's fine when you think about a big company, but we work with
the
smaller
companies.
Exactly, the price cap. And okay, fine, you take the big players, right? Let's Gong, Sainsbury's. Let's talk about I think that we've got like a sawmill who wanted, you know, who have seen their electricity prices go from 300,000 to something like a million. And that's a family-owned business, right? What are they gonna do? They're not thinking, well, if we shift this, if we reduce energy and we were in contracts or whatever, I know the contracts are slightly different for smaller businesses. What they're going to do.
I'm quite anti-price cap, though, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. I think the price cap, I know, we're going off
topic. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Here, but so the price cap covers, it's there to protect vulnerable people, i.e. people who can't afford their electricity bills and gas bills, which I think as a society, we should try and protect those people.
Yeah, of course.
But the government rushing to step in and do this price cap methodology, which basically pushes all of it onto suppliers and essentially puts it onto... Yeah, it sort of democratizes the cost, but also suppliers have got the headache of doing it. I just think it's crazy that the government is now stepping in and setting prices of a commodity that is set by a global energy market. But yeah, I can see why businesses aren't included. But I mean, imagine the headache if they were.
Well, oh yeah, so I'm 100% not advocating a price cap for businesses. I think I think that would be the end of the world, as we know
it. I think we shouldn't have a price cap. What we should be doing is stepping in to support businesses and people who are vulnerable to pay their bills. I think we should do that rather than trying to put this weird thing in place.
I don't disagree. I think fundamentally that the reason we do what we do, and it isn't, just to be clear, it's not just energy that we save. Like, we optimize assets, reduce downtime. So there's lots of other things that we do with companies, and that's why we're purely a technology play. The price cap piece is interesting because you're kind of shielded from it. Like as a domestic consumer of electricity and gas, you have been shielded from it for so long, and then it's a massive jump. And I don't even know if it's a zero sum game, but you know, we are where we are because of global issues. Something's got to give, and this is where we are today. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's a cycle as well, because if you think about some of the Komodo factory that is UK based, where prices are going up,
yep,
those prices go up even further. People look to other countries that maybe have a slightly different way of, from an economic perspective.
Or different carbon accounting regime,
exactly.
Yeah.
Businesses go under because people choose to go for the cheaper option. So it's a vicious cycle. I don't have the answer to it. I wish I did.
Well, you do have some of the answer, right?
Some of it.
Which is like, don't run your fridges when they're empty.
Yeah.
Or don't run your fridges overnight when you...
Exactly, or you know, some really cool stuff.
Obsessed,
you know,
with fridges, I don't know.
Well, it might be
loads of stuff, right?
Well, you know, in the industrial depots, you know, we you'll basically over chill during the kind of the cheaper periods, right? You know, the rag periods.
The rag periods.
You know, red, amber, green. So you know, Duos, right?
Yep.
And it sounds like, oh, you're ragging your depot. They're not, but they might over chill and they'll set the set points a lot lower so during the more expensive hours. They can turn everything off.
So depots that are chilling foods are over-chilling food and exact up front.
They can do.
They can do. To avoid the red rates on their Duos charges.
Very smart.
That is the sort of thing they should be doing, right?
Yeah,
I guess that's what the red amber beam was designed to do.
Exactly.
Yeah? To encourage you not to take power at that time.
And now we're kind of going into this area of, like in logistics depots where people, you know, everyone wants to put in like electric charge points, and also like the electrification of the fleets. Oh my goodness, like you can imagine what's going on there.
So question for you as Jordan of Hawk. My concern is that our business, Modo Energy, is we are so tempted to do so many different things.
Yeah.
Like we've got this core product that does this thing, and then we could do anything. We could do long-term forecasting, we could do some international exposure, we could do EV charging stuff.
Yeah.
It's so tempting to do so much.
Yeah.
We've somehow managed to get this far by being laser focused on one thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
My question to you is, are you even not even more tempted to do that stuff? Because there are so many places you can go to. So you talked about uptime, you talked about carbon removal, you talked about electricity reduction, you talked about different assets that you can control or monitor. You can do dashboards, you can do integrations, you can do everything.
Single day I wake up and I want to do more, right?
Yeah.
But we're a small team and we have to, you have to ask yourself, what do you want to be the best in the world at, right? If Hark's going to be the best in the world at one thing, you know, what is that? And for us, it's basically the asset connectivity and giving our customers the ability to control any asset, plug and play, right? We have energy tools, we have analytical capability because that's born out of necessity, right? You need those point solutions. But that's typically what companies and people are coming to us today, because if you can't see it, how are you going to fix it, right?
And what about B2C? Have you guys thought about doing B2C? Like the idea, you buy a washing machine, it comes with a QR code, you scan I buy a washing machine, I scan the QR code, it takes me to Hark, I put my little details in, and it's already got the bit in, and you guys control it from the word go.
That, I mean, don't get me wrong, again, I wake up in the, every day and think that's something, but to your point, you've got to be laser focused on that one thing, and I suppose the consumer market is very different. It's a very different ball game because if you think about it, you would go up against someone like Amazon, who are, if you've seen, they've just bought, the robot Hoover company or whatever. They've got Alexa, they've got smart controls, you've got Philips, you've got all of these other companies that are doing in that smart home space. And yeah, while we have the technology to technically do it, how do you get into that market? How do you make it a success? And, I am probably the worst consumer when it comes to tech. Because I'll tweet people like, it's not working, and I don't want to be on the receiving end of me as a consumer, basically.
Oh, yeah. So I did say that. I don't know. I really like B2C businesses in general, but I just know that I would never, ever be able to be involved in one because much of it is marketing, so much of it is customer experience. You have to get some, influencers on Instagram. It's all well beyond my pay grade. I don't really understand it. But I am very impressed by people who manage to get technology in people's homes.
The amount of funding required, and don't get me wrong, the money is out there, but the ability to do that, I mean, it's a long game, the market's quite crowded, But it is important because, you know, if you think about domestic and homes and how much energy is wasted or what you can do to kind of optimize, there's a huge opportunity there.
There's a massive opportunity.
But Hark are not going anywhere near that anytime soon.
No, good. So you guys are B2B. Let's talk a bit more about your customers. So we talked about Sainsbury's, yeah. Dong. What other type of customer types do you have?
So give you an example. We work with a chemical plant or chemical plants, factories. We've got restaurants as well that are all looking to do things. I suppose the chemical plants are my favorite because I get to see like really high voltage stuff, you know, like for them, what we're doing is we're going into there. They've got substations on site, 2 square miles of plant, and they're looking to try and optimize energy, utilities, figure out how they can optimize their processes. So with those customers, we're going in, they're installing really interesting equipment. You know, it's quite cool to see like one site use 40 megawatts of power in live on the platform. And you're thinking, this is one place, and you see the, you know.
What is that? Like a steelworks or?
Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to say due to what they do. But it's.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and but it's.
So anyone who listens to this, we're going to have to kill them.
Well, yes. If I, you know, or I think you. I would get murdered.
You'll get murdered. No, I'm joking. Someone's going to pay the price. But, we won't ask anymore.
No, it's all good. But it's those kind of things that are really interesting because you actually, it goes back to all those moving parts and how they're doing it. Because it's one thing for a supermarket, but for factories where security and cybersecurity is so important, how do you deploy that, right? How do you take what is quite invasive technology, if you think about what you can do and what data you can get out of it, and secure it to the point where, you know, it can't be hacked.
So right? What is it? Is it a box?
Yeah, so
That you plug in somewhere.
So Hark Connect runs on any industrial gateway, anything on Linux, and typically we use industrialized gateways from, it could be Advantech, it could be Dell. We're completely hardware agnostic right now.
A gateway being a...
It's basically
a computer-looking box.
It's a computer-looking box. Like, we made the decision. I said we made hardware in the early days. We did do that. It's bloody expensive. And I, you know, 3D printing. You know, I remember in the early days, we were 3D printing enclosures for this Raspberry Pi-based compute module thing that we had built and we were shipping to customers. And it was expensive. It kept me up at night. Even though they all still work, right? Some have been in 5-6 years. They all still work because of the way we designed them. But the amount of money you need in tooling to do all of that. So we just said, okay, let's just make it work with anything. So you want to run our stuff on a Raspberry Pi? Fine, you run it on a Raspberry Pi. We don't advocate that. We typically use industrial gateways from providers of industrial compute. For, you know, we've got a big property company. They've installed all our kit on a server in their server room that's connected to all our assets. We don't mind. And why? Because we can then democratize. It's not hardware that people need to worry about. It's you take our software, you put it on whatever gateway you want, as long as it's got the right IO, we can connect to those assets.
Cool. And so I want to come to forward-looking stuff. So you guys have been going 7 years, right? And
yeah, about six now. Six years. Five full-time. I don't count the first year because, I mean, it was just me and Andrew in a room trying to figure out what we were doing with our lives.
Yeah. We should probably discount our first year.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly the same as that. So, yeah, we've gone through the customers and what the problem is. What about the future? Where's this whole thing headed? Are you going to is it smaller assets? Is it more complicated assets? Is it just more of them?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So fundamentally, there is a massive problem with edge control. So now we see, you know, you've got solar, you've got EV, you've got storage, then you've got your actual load of your building on site. How do you optimize that? Because you can't do it from the cloud, right? How are you going to make
it? Why can't we do it from the cloud?
Well, it's not that you can't do it from the cloud in the sense that you can't compute that stuff in the cloud. It's more that you need local control and very fast changes to the way things are, like what assets are doing. It could be set points. It could be turning off EV charge points based on, you know, what load or what power, you know, limits you want to put in place. It could be based on wind or solar or the sun and how much, you know, does a cloud go over? What does that mean? So there's a big challenge now of how do you like orchestrate all of that to kind of optimize power, right? How do you optimize all your generation on site? So where Hark are going to go is bringing more of that to the edge. We do a lot of edge control already, as you know, because we have to. But how do you make all of that intelligent stuff happen on the edge?
What does on the edge mean?
On the edge literally means as close to those assets as possible. So there is that small box is the edge. It's
doing the thing.
It's edge compute.
So this is nuts because like if you think about PlayStation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I had a like Nintendo 64, Mega Drive, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then this new one would come out every year, and we're now on PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
And every year it gets better and better and better. And then out of nowhere, 5 years ago, Google said, "We're going to launch this Google Stadia thing."
Yeah.
And everyone said, "No, it's not going to work in the cloud. The latency is too long." Blah blah blah. And here you go. You've got people now streaming games over the internet.
Yeah.
So that whole world. I've gone off a bit of a tangent now. It's all going towards cloud in a way that people thought it was impossible. So why can't the business power control world also do the same?
It's not that it can't. It absolutely can use the cloud. The cloud is a necessary part of what we do. But if you think about the sample rates that you need, so fundamentally, like we work with a company that sample at something like 16,000 times a second on like 16 channels of sensors that deal with power, and they generate something like 10 meg. To 100 meg of data a second. And if you think about where these assets are and what kind of infrastructure is in place, you need a pretty beefy connection. And that infrastructure isn't there, fundamentally. Yeah. So fine, that's one problem. The other challenge of that is that fundamentally, like if you're sampling 50 times a second, 100 times a second, you need to make really quick, fast changes to those set points or whatever. You don't want a round trip going 8 milliseconds up to, you know, up to the cloud and then back to then work out what your set point control is. I mean, that might work for certain scenarios.
Yeah, but they said that about rumble packs on controllers, right?
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I definitely think there will be areas of control that will use the cloud, but
it's not there yet.
I think if you've got 4G or you've got latency problems, I mean, what happens if the internet goes down?
Yeah.
And what happens if, for instance, I mean, this is a challenge. What happens if you are in the market side of things, executing some kind of trade or something expected to happen with dispatch? It doesn't happen. And okay, fine, batteries, but think about buildings and the way they're expected to run against maybe co-located storage or co-located generation. What happens if it all goes down even for 10 minutes?
Yeah, we've got some stuff to work through. I want to ask you about batteries now, just before we finish. Yeah. So you guys controlled a battery before, you did a Tesla system.
Yeah.
Are you not tempted to get into the optimization space?
I would love to. Like, again, I've got so many ideas. The thing about the optimization space for us is I think there are companies that do it really, really well, and they've been at it a long time. And I think if you're just doing batteries, and you're just doing market and batteries, I think that market is, I don't think it's like fully saturated. I think there's a lot of optimization still left to do. I'm looking ahead and looking at, okay, well, what if you do batteries with solar, with wind, like I said, and I think that's the area we're gonna focus on because I think that's it's a much harder problem because you've got more, well, you've got more inputs. You've got to factor in algorithms that take so much stuff into play. Doing that and computing that takes time. Doing that in real time takes a lot of compute. It takes a lot of. It's not been solved yet, and I think that's where I like to kind of spend my time.
Awesome. So you guys come into co-location soon behind a meter.
We will see. We will see. I think it'll be with a partner. 100%. It will be with a partner. We'll just be providing the technology that makes that happen.
Awesome. So that's it. We've come to the end of the time. I just want to say thank you very much for coming on. We're going to put Hark's detail, your details, and also the company's details in the show notes below so you can find it. Anyone who's listening, please, I've been told we have to say this every time now, please do subscribe and like the link, and we will see you again soon. Thank you very much.